Okay, welcome everyone to the second half of our information event today, where I will be telling you about how to write a successful research plan. So, let's get started. Okay, so in Finland, we have the following funding sources. These are foundations. These are not all the foundations. There are a number of smaller foundations which also give grants. But these are the main ones that have come to my attention would be important in our faculty. So first of all, we have Kone Foundation. And I have here the list of how many grants were awarded in, this is probably 2016. So this is the information that is here is either for 2016, if the awards are not yet known for 2017, or for this year, if the awards came earlier this year. So basically, the important thing for you to know is that the success rate for Kone Foundation is about 10% nowadays. And it's also the important thing for you to know is the application deadlines, so that you can see how much competition you're up against. So for Vihuri Foundation, the success rate is about 9%. So 9 to 10%. For Finnish Cultural Fund, it has been about 12%. And this is about the common percentage of success. That means that if you want to get funding, your application needs to be better than 90% of the other applicants. So really, there needs to be a lot of attention paid to your application and especially to your research plan. Okay, so we have these other ones. We have Aaltonen Foundation, and these are ranked in order from largest in terms of the number of grants given, and you can see also number of applications, to smaller. Now, it is important to note that not all of these foundations give large one-year grants. Some of them give smaller grants as well. And I'm going to continue to the next slide where we have some of the slightly smaller foundations in terms of the amount of money given. So, for example, Cordelin Foundation did not give one-year grants in 2017. They gave smaller grants. And Oskar Öflund Stiftelse only gives small grants. So it's important to look at how large the grants are that they are offering. And there is actually only one foundation which until now, and I tried to look now for more information, but until now has given only to Finnish language applicants. But there's only one foundation. So if people tell you that the other foundations only give to Finnish applicants or primarily to Finnish-speaking applicants, that is not necessarily true. For example, for Kone Foundation, I know that internationalism is important to them. So just to apply for everything that is sort of humanly possible that you have time to do, and in that way you have a better chance of getting funded. Okay, so if we go forward, this is just to give, this is from Kone Foundation's own web pages, and this is to give you an idea of how much they give funding to the humanities and the social sciences. So all of the pink and purple areas are the pink is the humanities areas and the purple is social sciences. So you can see that Kone Foundation actually gives the largest percentage of their funding to the fields representative in our faculty. So I think that I hear people say sometimes, well, these foundations only give to natural sciences, or they only give to, you know, to something that is not represented in our faculty, and that's not true, especially for Kone Foundation. Okay, so we have, in the past, there has been some frequently asked questions, and I will also take your questions at the end. So one question is, how does previously received funding affect a person's chances of being funded again? And foundations always ask if the applicant has received prior funding. Is this seen as a good thing? And the answer is yes. Okay, foundations watch what each other do to some extent, and it's only seen as a good thing that you've gotten previous funding. Okay, so keep applying. And a second question, if one's application is not funded, does there remain a black mark about this? Does it affect funding chances later? As far as I know, no. Every new funding cycle, every new application is a new chance to try over again. As far as I know, the foundations do not keep your old rejection decisions, and those are thrown away and forgotten. So you don't have to worry about there remaining any kind of black mark. Okay, third question was, if I promise something in a research plan, do I have to do it? Can my plans change? Does anyone in the foundation or, for example, in the faculty check this? And the answer is, as far as I understand, your plans can change and nobody checks. What the foundations want and what the faculty wants is for you to finish your PhD, to finish your dissertation within 4 years. Okay, that is their goal. They want you to have, and of course they want your dissertation to be high quality, and they want people to read it. They want it to be relevant to science and to society, if possible. But they're not checking that what you promised in your research plan is exactly what you've done, because everyone understands that plans change. We all grow, we all learn, and we realize that maybe a better methodology is needed to research this, or that something isn't working, and so plans need to change. So don't worry, this is not a promise. Actually, your research plan is more of an advertisement of how clearly you are thinking and how much you've thought ahead, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Okay, there was more questions. If my research topic is on the boundary between two different fields, which field do I choose for my application? Now, this is an important question because a lot of people think to themselves that my research doesn't really fit the core field or the core center of my particular field. So, for example, if I'm an ethnologist, which I am, I might think that perhaps the historians would understand my historical work better than ethnologists. So I might think that, oh, I'll apply to history. Don't do it. This is not something you want to do. There are two reasons for this. First of all, the people who are deciding your fundings are political decisions. So they are looking at how much money is earmarked, for example, for ethnology, okay, or for history, or for whatever field you're in. And a historian is going to look at where I'm doing my PhD, and if I'm doing it in ethnology, they're going to say, well, I'm not going to fund this person. They're not in history. Each field has only a small pool of money. And so the evaluators are going to be looking very closely at where the person is actually, in what field the person is getting their PhD, okay? Because that's what counts. So it's your field that counts. It's not whether you think that your research would fit better into another area. And the other reason that it's important to choose your own area, if you have to put a category, is because your area, even if you are beginning in PhD studies, your area is already the one in which you are learning the right jargon. You are learning how things are said in that field. And none of us, even myself as a professor, I am not able to write something convincingly for another field because I don't know how they write. I don't know how they use their language, what terms they use, how they argue things. So each of us is trained in one particular field, and that's the one we need to stick with. Instead of worrying that, oh, my research is so on the margins or no one appreciates it, no one understands it, argue in your research plan why your research is relevant for your field of study. Convince the reader that even if it might seem to them something strange and different and new, why this is in fact important for the field. And if you can argue that convincingly, you will win over any evaluator. But it's a question of writing clearly and thinking about these justifications for why your research is important. Okay, and second, the last question is, if I am writing in a language which is not my native language, is it important that someone else checks the language? Yes, because even if all of us, of course, have challenges to write in a language which is not our own native language, the problem is that we don't know how a reader will read our sentences. So if it's not checked by somebody, the person who's reading it might understand it in a completely different way than what we meant. So this is why it doesn't have to be, it's not that every word has to be spelled exactly right, although it looks better, but the idea is you have a certain meaning and a certain message that you're trying to get through. So it is important that if you're applying in English, that somebody would have a chance to check your English just to make sure that it's understandable. I have the same problem in Finnish. I'm not able to write scientific texts in Finnish. So I'm not really able to just write an application in Finnish and expect someone to understand it. And it's, we all face those same difficulties. Okay, so in your research plan, and I will give you step-by-step instructions in a moment of how you will write your research plan. However, it's important to remember these three important things. And the first one is a justification. Why is this research important? Why is it so important that it needs to be funded instead of somebody else's application? So why is it important in a larger picture? Why is it important to society? Why is it important to my field? Why is it important to humanity? Why is it important to the particular theory or theoretical discussions that I'm participating in? And not everything has to be theoretical. I'm just using that as an example. Okay, so justification for why this is important. That is going to come at the beginning of your research plan, or your research plan. And then the next most important thing is clarity. So you need to write so that someone from a completely different field will understand what you're trying to say. So you can forget the idea that we need to sound intellectual and intelligent. No. You just are going to write a simple research plan, something that anyone could understand. And for this, I think looking at social media, at the news stories, and seeing how sort of strongly and briefly they're able to get their point across, that's very important. You want to do the same, because your evaluators are probably not going to know anything about your own research topic, even if they're from your same field. Fields are so very broad. So writing very clearly, and giving it to friends who are not in your field, giving it to family members who are not in the university or in academic life, and asking them if they understand it. That's something you can do to check. Okay, and the last one, which is really important, is the narrow scope, in Finnish, rajaus. So the scope of your question that you're asking, I'm going to talk more about the research question in a few minutes, the scope of the data that you're going to use, all of it needs to be narrow. Why? Because the evaluator in the foundation or at the faculty wants to be convinced, needs to be convinced, that you will finish this in 3 or 4 years. So for example, if I was an evaluator from Kone Foundation, which gives 3-year grants, and they give one year at a time, but it's usually for 3 years, they want to make sure that you will have something significant finished at the end of that 3 years. If you are trying to do too much, if you are trying to answer all the world's questions in your dissertation, I agree that that's more fun, but it's not going to convince the evaluator. They are going to be worried that when your funding runs out in 3 or 4 years, that you will be left with only half a dissertation, and that's not going to help anybody. That's not going to help the foundation. The foundation wants to use your dissertation as a kind of public relations tool. They want to be able to put your dissertation title on their web pages to say, look, we funded this. If you don't ever finish your dissertation, then they have received nothing from their investment. So you have to think of this like a business deal or an investment deal that you are offering to create a product for them, which is basically your dissertation, and it needs to be finished in the amount of time that you will have funding for. So it needs to be narrow in scope. You are only going to answer one small scientific question. You're taking one small scientific step forward. And that can be painful for curious researchers. I understand that there's so many things we are interested in and that we want to answer, but especially when you're applying for funding, you have to choose. If you have lots of different directions in which you want to go, choose one, okay, especially for your funding proposal. In real life, there's nothing to stop you from doing what you really want to do if you can get it done in time. But for the funding proposal, remember, this is just an advertisement of what you are telling them you're going to do. Okay, so maybe just choose one of those ideas. Okay, so as I was saying, your research plan is a bid or a tender to construct something. So just in the same way that a government, when they want to build a bridge, they will ask different companies to put in their tender or their bid for how quickly they can construct the bridge, how much money they're going to need. This is what your funding application is. You are putting in a tender to create a PhD dissertation, and the foundation or the faculty is looking at which bid they like best. And that is what you need to keep in mind. So many people will be competing for this research construction job, and the evaluator who reads your plan, they only have a little bit of money to give to people. So it's really a competition. They may think that all of the research plans they read are fascinating and interesting. They may truly want to fund them all, but they cannot. They have only a little small amount of money. So the person who is evaluating does not care what you are studying. They are not going to choose their favorite topic. They are not going to choose their favorite field. They are going to choose the research plan that seems to promise the best results in the shortest amount of time, and results that will make the foundation or the faculty look good. So this is what they are concerned about, and this is what you need to be concerned about, is a concrete action plan to convince them. So your research plan needs to be a 3-year or a 4-year package. Do not promise them something or talk about something which might take 10 or 20 years to finish, because they will not be convinced. They want your PhD. They want your dissertation. And your research plan needs to be a step-by-step action plan. It is not a list of everything you are interested in. You are not going to give them a lot of background about how interesting this topic is. I'll show you soon. You are going to justify why this is important. But a lot of people get bogged down when they start writing all the things that interest them in their research plan. I realize that this is a good process for helping yourself think, but it's not going to be what will convince the funder. Okay? So you need to convince them that you will get the job done on time, and that means within 4 years. Okay, so when I evaluate applications in the faculty, and especially research plans, I have been looking for 8 things, okay? And I've already gone through some of them with you, and I'm going to show you in a minute how you're going to put these together. But these are the 8 things. Let's just go through them really fast so that we already talked about the justifications for the importance of the research topic and the clarity of the research plan. Then you will have a research question. And this research question needs to have a question mark at the end. In Finland, traditionally, people have not always had research questions. They have had aims or something similar. And I would urge you not to do that. I would urge you to have actual research questions. And the reason is because when the evaluators of your dissertation are reading it in the end, they are going to look at your research question, and they are going to see that you have gone through all the steps of gathering your data and analyzing it and coming up with the analysis. But the end, the conclusions, are going to be the answer to your research question. And this is how they will judge whether you have succeeded in your task or not. If there's no research question at the beginning, there's no way to know or to evaluate, have you succeeded? And that's why a research question is important. And I'll talk more about that in a moment. Not simply goals, because then it's hard to say, well, have you achieved those goals or not? Okay? And fourth, we have here the sufficiently narrow scope of the research topic and the research questions, which I've already talked about. So number 5 is, how clearly does your research link up with prior research? So what you want to imagine is that there's a scientific discussion, okay? It's going on, and it's linked to your research topic, and you need to convince the evaluator of your research funding. You need to convince them that your research actually is connected to a discussion, that somebody will care and will be interested to read your dissertation when it is finished. Because if your research topic doesn't actually link to a larger scientific discussion, then nobody's going to read your dissertation and nobody's going to care. And then the foundation will not want to fund it because they will say, well, Why are we funding something that is not relevant either to academia or to society? So you need, now for many people, this is difficult, and it means that you have to read a lot of research. A lot of people say, well, my research topic is so new, there is no discussion about it. You have to find a discussion which links up with it, okay? And that means that you have to dig a little bit deeper. But there always will be a discussion. And sometimes you have to go back to the reason why, how did you get interested in that topic? Everyone, when you think about it long enough, sometimes it requires a lot of thinking. You can find that spark, the initial reason why you got interested in the topic. Remember that spark that got you interested in, it's Kipina in Finnish. Remember it, and then you will probably have a better sense of why this is important and how it links up with other questions, social issues, academic, theoretical, scientific issues. Okay, so then we have number six, how will the research actually be carried out step by step? This is something which many foundations do not ask for, and yet when I have been an evaluator, I realize that again and again, it's what I'm looking for. When I'm reading other people's research plans, I want to see how are they going to actually carry this out. Because often, the theory is really exciting, the topic is fascinating, but if I, as a reader, cannot see how they are going to actually carry out step by step what they're going to do first, what they're going to do next, is this possible, then I'm not convinced. And if I'm not convinced, I cannot recommend that they be funded. So this is something that you need to explain in very simple terms. You want a concrete implementation plan that you can show to your mother or your brother, and they'll say, oh, I see what you're going to do. And that means that if people say to me, well, I will be using this data, I want to know, can you really get that data? If it's on the internet, do you have access to that? If you say you're going to interview people, are those people going to agree to be interviewed by you? How are you going to find them? Everything needs to be explained out. You have to imagine that there's someone sitting across from you who is being a devil's advocate, who is saying, I don't believe you can do this. And you have to explain it to them. Okay? So that's the concrete implementation plan, and I'll show you where that goes in the research plan. And then we have source materials and methods for collecting them. Okay? That's usually almost the easiest thing for PhD students to write. And also, my advice here is also useful for postdoctoral researchers. So this is the easy thing to write, but there is one more thing that you need to add to this section. And that is that you need to tell the reader or the evaluator, why are these the best source materials possible? And why are these the best methods for collecting them in order to answer your research question? So the research question is your core. Everything goes back to your research question. And you need to tell why these source materials and these methods for collecting them are going to be the best possible to answer your research question. Then, finally, we have methods of analysis. So a lot of applicants, when they hear the word methods, they think that we're talking about only methods to collect your data. But there's actually two kinds of methods. There are methods for collecting your data, and there are methods for analyzing your data. So once you have your source materials, once you have the entire data, what will you do with it then? How will you get your meanings from that data? How will you make your interpretations from that data? That's important. So you need to explain that. Now, that does not mean that you have to follow somebody else's methods of analysis. It doesn't mean you have to use someone else's name for methods of analysis. You can make up your own. All you have to do is you explain to the reader, and in this case the evaluator, what exactly you plan to do with your data, step by step. You can give it a name. Sometimes that's easiest. You can make up your own names. You are the researcher here, but make it clear to the reader what you're going to do. Okay. Now, the first page in your research plan is the most important. And what I will be doing now is writing, showing you how the first page should be set up. This is not the only answer. different evaluators do read these things differently, and they do have, every evaluation is subjective. But after being an evaluator in many different circumstances, this is my best guess for how I would, and I do need to force myself also when I apply for funding to follow this. It's not easy, but it does give you a sense of where to go. So let's say that this is page number one, okay? So in order to write this first page, we need to understand that most evaluators truly spend only 2 to 3 minutes reading a research plan. Research has shown this. Research has also shown that most evaluators, once they've read your first page, they've already decided whether they want to fund your proposal. So the first page is very important. Research, I'm going to just skip there. So the first page should have your careful explanation of why this research is important both to science and to society. If your research is more geared to science or more geared to society, it doesn't have to be both. But this is where you're going to put this. You're going to have your title at the top. Make sure it is a clear title. Some people like to put little quotations after the title, something interesting or cute from that they found. Do not put these. They will not be understandable to the evaluator. You need to go immediately into the concrete and clear aspects of your research plan. So the first thing that you're going to have here, which is going to take up the first one-third of your page, is your justifications. Exactly why this research is important, okay? And you are going to explain it carefully. And unless your field is history, which is more conservative, you will want to begin with a dramatic opening sentence. From the video, you may not be able to see what I'm writing here, but I'm writing dramatic opening sentence. Okay? What is a dramatic opening sentence? Many people have asked this. A dramatic opening sentence is something that is surprising. Something, a surprising fact, a surprising idea, something that will catch your reader's attention. Okay? Where can you get this dramatic opening sentence? This will be the first sentence at the beginning of your research plan. Where can you get this? You can get this from anywhere. You can get this from your research literature. You can get it, you can find it from social media. You can find it from your own data if you've already collected some data and you have found some surprising things. Okay, so it doesn't matter where you get it from as long as you're fairly sure that it's true, okay? You would open with this, a surprising fact to catch the reader's attention. And then from that surprising fact, you will follow with why this research is important or why it is important to take this surprising thing into account. Okay, so it's something surprising which is linked to your research. So you have, this is your justification section. Next, you will want to give them your research question right away. And this is even if the foundations are only seem to be asking for your research question on the second or third page. Try to add it here nevertheless, because evaluators want to see it. And the reason they want to see it is because they will be able to, in a nutshell, understand your research much better if they can see your research question. So what you want to say is, if you're writing a doctoral dissertation, you want to tell them right away what kind of dissertation this is. So in this article dissertation, or you can say monograph dissertation, okay? And you can say simply, I ask, or my research question is, and then you will have one question is the ideal. You can have a maximum of 3 questions, but not more than 3 questions, because after 3 questions, it starts to look too fragmented. It does not look like one project. And then the evaluator begins to be worried that how are you going to answer, for example, 4 or 5 questions, how are you going to be able to do all of this and answer these questions convincingly in 4 years? And most evaluators will feel that that's quite difficult. So you want to have maximum 3 questions, But the ideal is to have one question. If you can summarize your entire research in one question, then you are really ahead of the game. So after this, then you will write in order. This may be a bit, maybe I'm going to switch to green here if it's a bit more clear. Yeah, it's going to be clear probably. In order to answer this question or these questions, I will use something as my source data. And you will then tell very briefly in one line, you will summarize what your source data is, or if in your field the word source material is more commonly used, that's all right. So you are going to now just use one line to talk about your source data very briefly. Okay? The goal here is that in a nutshell, the evaluator is going to be able to see your research question, your source data, and now we're going to tell them the methods for analysis. Okay? So then next we write, in order to analyze. And I'm sorry for the video viewers if this is unclear, but basically it says, in order to analyze this data, or if you prefer, these materials, I will use, and we're XX methods. I'm going over my page here. Okay, let me say this again for those, in case this is unclear. So in reality, this is not going to go down to the end of your first page. In reality, this is going to only take up about this much space on your page, okay? We have more that we need to add here at the end of the page. In order to answer this question or these questions, I will use something as my source data. You can say interviews, you can say surveys, you can say intranet. Something very briefly. You're going to tell them more on page 2, but here you're just summarizing it. In order to analyze this data, I will use what I typically say for my data is contextualized thematic analysis, which is something I sort of made up. I'm sure other people have used it, but make up a name for your methods, and then you will explain them again on page 2. Okay, and so now we have this in a nutshell, okay? Now, I'm going to actually move this chair so that I can continue. Since we've run out of room there, we are going to continue. This is the bottom half of page 1. Okay, we're still on page 1, and I'm actually running out of ink again. Let's see if red works better. Okay, now, the next category that you want is, I would entitle this, how this research links to prior research, okay? So the idea here is that this is where you are going to tell them how your research is part of the larger scientific discussion. And here, you are going to give your literature references, okay, either in footnotes or in the text itself. You're going to refer to other people's work, only other people's work that is directly relevant for your own. Otherwise, you're going to run out of space. Okay, so this is going to go to the end of page 1 and probably then start on page 2. Okay, so it's probably going to spill over onto page 2, but this is where you will tell how your research is situated in the larger scientific discussion. And you're going to give literature references. And those literature references are also going to go in the bibliography or the list of literature cited at the end of your research plan. Okay, it's important that it's in both places, that it's here so that people can see why that literature is relevant for your research, and also that then the full references are given at the end so that they can see that these actually exist. If you say Smith 1980, that they can see what work that is referring to, okay? So now, because this will be on a video, so I'm going to actually erase this part. Now we're going to go to page 2. Okay, so here we are on page 2. And I'm going to assume that this section of how your research links to prior research, I'm going to assume that it has spilled over onto page 2, but I'm just to save space, I'm going to start here. The next thing you want on page 2 is your concrete implementation plan. And this is not going to be very long, okay? You are going to be summarizing in very simple language, step by step, how you are going to do this. Not necessarily what you're going to do, you've already told that in your research question, but how you are actually going to do it. Very simple. There will be people, for example, who have no idea how your data is collected. So don't use difficult terms. Don't use, if your data is located in an archive, tell them that. Tell them which archive and tell them do you have access to it and how you're going to find it in the archive. If it's on the internet, the same thing. How are you going to have access to it? How are you going to find it, etc. If you're going to interview people, how many people and where are they and etc. So everything, just all of the kind of basic nuts and bolts of how you're going to be able to do this. This is the thing that we forget because to us it's so obvious already, but it is not obvious to the reader. So you will have your concrete implementation plan and it will take up about that much space. And after that, you're going to have your, and I'm continually running out of ink here, so let's try this one again. Yeah. You have your source methods and data, okay? So this is where you're going to, now you only briefly mentioned your source methods and data before, and here halfway through page 2 is where you will give us more information about them. And remember, it's not just describing them, but it's also telling why these are the best ones to answer the research questions. Okay? And remember that methods here is both the collection methods and the analysis methods, so both kinds. Now, the last thing that, actually there's two more things that are absolutely necessary, okay? Now, this plan that I'm giving you is more or less for a 3-page research plan, which some foundations are already requesting, okay? And I think we are going in that direction of the research plans getting smaller. So this is basically advice for when, if you have only 3 pages, what to put there. So I would say that if you are writing an article dissertation, you should have a section called articles. And this is going to be short, and I'll show you how I recommend that you set it up. The evaluator is going to want to know what kind of articles you are writing for your article dissertation, but this is fairly simple. You start with number one. And you are going to say the title of the article, okay? So, I'm sorry, my handwriting is not very good, but we have title there. Then, you are going to put the sub-question that is going to be asked by this particular article. Now, one of the things that you can say right after this title is that you can say something like, every article in my dissertation answers the main research question from a different perspective. Or every article in my dissertation is answering the main research question in its own way, or answering a sub-question of the main research question. But what you need to convince the evaluator here in this section is that this is not four different, if you have 4 articles, it's not 4 different studies. You're not going in 4 different directions. It's 1 study, and it can be done in 4 years. Okay, so this is you have to prove this. So you're going to put the title. Now, for many of you, you don't know the title of your articles yet. Put a working title. Everyone understands that it will change. And so it's just sort of your best guess at this point. Then put the sub-question that you intend this article to answer, the sort of the part of your main research question that this article will be addressing. Then you will put the journal that either it has been published in, if it's already been published, or that it will be published in, and put the year. Now, you don't know, of course, what journal it will be published in, but this is where the evaluator is simply asking you to think about this, and that you, the evaluator is looking, do you know the main journals in your field? And are you ambitious? And are you, you know, are you prepared for this? So you put a journal that you most likely think you will be submitting it to, okay? And then you do the exact same thing for all of your other articles, if you have three or four or how many. I would not recommend more than five, then it starts to look like too much work. In our faculty, I believe that four is enough. I honestly have to say I don't remember exactly how many one needs, but I believe you don't need more than four. So, yes, please. No, no. The question was, if the research is not article-based, does that put the applicant at a disadvantage? No. We are currently in a situation where different fields have different types of dissertations that they prefer. There are some fields I know in our faculty where article dissertations are still somewhat frowned on, so not as preferred by professors, for example. Other places, other departments in our faculty where everyone is doing article dissertations, and there's very, very few monograph dissertations. Actually, the truth is, I believe the evaluators don't care. They simply want that you have finished your dissertation in 4 years. If you are going to do a monograph dissertation, you do not have to put this section, of course. And I would say, don't put it. Don't try to put chapters or anything like that, because a monograph is already understood to be one study. It's especially when it comes to article dissertations that there might be questions in the evaluator's mind that, is this really one study? Is it cohesive? So that's where I would say. But you will put it at the beginning on your first page where it said, in this monograph dissertation, I will ask. And then you have your research question. You'll let them know already there that you are writing a monograph dissertation. Okay? So you've got this. And then the last thing, which doesn't fit here anymore on my drawing, so I'm going to put it, but it actually goes, of course you have the bibliography, the list of references at the end, but before that you're going to need a timetable. Okay, now I need more better ink here. Okay, so you're going to have a timetable. Now, many applicants build beautiful diagrams of their timetable, very visual, but I would recommend you not do that because they take up too much space. You will have limited space, and you are going to need to devote as much space to answering the other questions that the evaluator has. Of course, different evaluators see things differently, and evaluation is always subjective. But me personally, I believe that timetables are not that important. What the evaluator probably wants to know is that you know when you are finishing your PhD. How you get there is your own business. So exactly what you do in each year is going to be different for different applicants, and it's not something that an evaluator can really compare across applications. So in order to save space, I recommend this. Let's say you're starting this year, but now you're applying for funding which starts in 2018. So you would say, in 2018, I will, and then this is going to be one line long, okay? Just one line. Very quickly, I will gather my source data, I will read background research literature, something very small. And then you have, you don't need to put numbers here, I'm just doing that to make it a little bit more clear. In 2019, I will. And you say what you'll do that year, one line. And then in 2020. So for each year of your dissertation, you will give one line telling what you are going to do. And that way, the evaluator can see when you are finishing. So in the last year, you'll say, well, I will defend my thesis, etc., at the end of the year, for example. Those who are watching the video are already perhaps 2 or 3 years into your PhD studies, you can use the first and second lines to show what you've already done. I have in 2016, I did this and this. In 2017, I did this, if you have only 2 or 1 year left of your PhD studies. So you can also move backward in time and explain. This is the same thing with the articles. You can say what articles you've already published, if in fact you've already published. So this would be my recommendation for making your timetable as small as possible, because you do not want to waste space in a research plan which is only 3 pages long. Okay. Other questions related to research plans, people sometimes ask me, well, if it says that I can write 10 pages, do I really need to write 10 pages? Isn't 6 enough? And I would say that if the foundation says that you can write 10 pages, try to make it close to 10 pages, 8 or 9 pages. But if it's much smaller than the other applicants' research plans, then the evaluator may already think, doesn't this person have as much to say as the other applicants? You do not want to look negative, or you do not want to compare unfavorably with other applicants. Remember, it's always a competition. It is not a question of whether your application is good enough. It's a question, are you better than the other 90% of the applicants? Okay, does anyone have questions about this plan that I've drawn?
How important is the last part for the application for these specific vacancies
in the faculty? So when you say the last part of the application, you're meaning?
The data, because I deleted that one from mine, because it was the 4th page. My proposal was 4 pages, but it says that it has to be 3 pages, so I eliminate that other one.
I understand. My feeling is that data is very crucial. It's very important. My feeling is if you've already run out of space after 3 pages, then you're making one section too long. You're giving too much attention to something where that you need to reduce it. So I would go back again through all 3 of your pages, because you still have about 2 weeks for this faculty call, and look at each of these sections that I have talked about and make sure that each one is condensed. Source data and methods and research question are the key things, as well as the why this is important, the justifications. So yes, you'll need to go back through and condense the other sections that you have. Somehow, it's not easy. I know it's not easy. And I always force myself to do this when I'm applying for funding, and it's always hard, and it doesn't get easier. The thing that I forgot to say is that we are trained to write in a certain scientific way. This is a completely different style of writing that we must use here when we're applying for funding. And it's not fun. If you're having fun writing this, you're doing it wrong. And you need to, it's painful. But it's the same kind of style that if you were giving a government bid or a tender, you are convincing them to invest in you. And you have to convince them that you will produce a product at the end. Okay, so other questions? Yes, please. Yes. Yes.
So, like, for example, are you also encouraging us to use some kind of for like a table or a chart?
No. That's what I'm saying not to use, actually. Thank you. The question was, for the timetable, should a chart or a table be used? And my recommendation is no. My recommendation is simply to write it out in prose like you're writing the rest of your text, just one line per year. So it's going to be very short. And the reason I'm saying don't use a table, I know that many evaluators are visually oriented. They like tables. But the truth is that if you have only 3 pages, it's taking up space that's not where the timetable is not that important and is taking up too much space. However, if you have 10 pages, then yes, if you have enough space. Yes. I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I would say if you have only 3 pages, don't use any tables. There's a lot of empty space in tables. However, I know what you mean, and that very often the tables help us as researchers to understand ourselves the process that we're going through. So I would say that if it does help you yourself, make a table for yourself, and when you have extra pages, if you have 6 or 10 pages for your research plan, then you can use the table. But if you have only 3, then it starts to be that the table and the empty space in the table is taking up space that needs to be used for explaining these other things. Okay, other questions? The answer to that question is different for every discipline, okay? So what I would ask you first is to ask that question from your supervisor, because they can tell you best what is expected in your field. In my field of ethnology, for example, we do not require our PhD students to write any articles in addition to their monograph. Usually it's a monograph dissertation. And they are not expected to write articles during their PhD period if they want to, but we are also encouraging them not to write too many because it's taking time away from their monograph. So, but that's going to be possibly different in different fields. And because the people that read your application are going to be more or less from your field. And they may be, for example, if you're doing about second language learning, English language as a second language, it might be evaluated by somebody who is a historian of Russian language. I mean, they may not, this is why I'm saying write very clearly, because they may not know anything about your field, but still they're going to be in the field of language. I'm just giving that as an example. And so ask your supervisor what is expected. My feeling is that the evaluator will be focusing on your dissertation. So whether that's your article dissertation or your monograph dissertation, they are not necessarily going to be focusing on other articles. However, I have had people in communications field say to me that no, PhD students are expected to have other articles written as well. And I'm not sure if I understood that right from them. But so clearly there's big differences from field to field. And ask your supervisor, they will know what is the most competitive thing for you to do. And I would say that from the faculty point of view, PhD students starting out are not at a disadvantage. We have a very limited amount of money, so that means that there's a limited amount of people getting first-year funding, a very limited amount of people getting second-year funding, third, all the way through. There's not as many possibilities for funding as we would like. But you're not at a disadvantage. We understand that everyone has to start somewhere. So everyone is a first-year PhD student at some point, and we don't want to make you wait without funding for a year. We understand that without funding, you cannot do much, if anything. So you're not at a disadvantage by being starting out. And I would say that in terms of asking about the question about the articles, ask your supervisor. Yeah. Other questions? Yeah, please. Please. Sure.
They might be expecting to kind of get to read. I mean, how much knowledge I do have from this field, right? So should I make a kind of difference between them and where I may apply for?
I understand. That's a good. The question was: is that when you know or you guess that the evaluators will be from your own specific field, should you put more professional jargon? Should you prove that you really know these terms? This is a difficult question. However, I would say that writing clearly and writing simply proves that you actually know what you're talking about. So that I think, from my point of view, writing in a simple way that other people, other academics from other fields could understand, is never a dangerous thing to do. And the reason is because anybody can take jargon from research literature without really understanding what it means. But if you explain it out clearly so that someone really understands, it means that you really know. You really know your stuff. You've really thought about it. It may be that, of course, as I said, different evaluators could be different. And I would say that if you know that your evaluator is definitely in your field, then yes, you can add a little more professional jargon. But if you need sort of one kind of template, you know, that you use again and again, I would recommend one that's very simple for everyone to understand, because you can never be sure exactly who's going to be reading your, and they need to understand it in order to recommend you for funding. This is the number one, the first wall that comes for them is if they don't understand exactly what you're saying, they will immediately say, okay, I can't fund this in good faith because I'm not sure what this even says, you know. So that's, it's important. I think it's most important to be clear. Other evaluators could disagree, but this is my best guess. Okay, let me see if I have, I'm actually at the end of my slideshow. Do we have more questions? No, in that case, I thank you, and I think the video can be over at this point. So thank you, and we're going to start.